Once there was a civilization, much like ours, but with a greater intelligence, greater powers, and a greater capacity for good.
Even though you've been raised as a human being, you are not one of them.
Folks, welcome back to the Light of Day with your host Sheldon Day, coming to you live on the Orion Talk Radio Network. We're live Saturday night, November 6, 2010. We got a 3-hour show tonight. I'm playing a specially created MP3 soundbite playlist here of various researchers, talk show hosts, etc., talking about the topic of Planet X and dot connectors with Planet X. During the top of the hour break here, I was hearing the network stream. So there were some moments of dead silence. I'm hoping this entire hour will go through okay. If anybody has any problems listening to the stream, would you please shoot me an email? It's gem3in Tucson@q.com. That's G-E-M, the number 3, in Tucson at Q.com. I know before I came on tonight, there were occasional moments where I would not hear Sean talking. I don't know what's going on, but we'll just try to do the best we can here, and we'll recontinue with the soundbite. This is actually Jason Rand talking about Planet X, so we'll get back to the soundbite. Please enjoy.
I believe that Planet X is actually a spent brown dwarf star. I think that it's at least the size of Saturn, but probably much more massive. And I believe that it's a celestial body that is connected to our solar system. This particular subject is little understood and not very much accepted by most modern-day astronomers. A brown dwarf star is simply a luminary body that failed to ignite like our sun did. Basically, it has mass, it has heat, it does not have the kind of color. That's why they call them brown dwarfs. They're like a muddy red. One of the reasons that they can't detect this particular body is because the range of light that it gives off is not easily detected that far away in space. And I also believe that it's coming in from the southern quadrant and therefore coming in from behind the sun. This orbit is greatly elongated. By the way, I also believe is a sister sun to our sun that we see every day
okay.
when we wake up in the morning.
Well, there are some who believe that we have a binary star system.
Absolutely.
Planet X, ladies and gentlemen, is very, very real. Its effects are being seen throughout the galaxy, especially in our solar system.
Well, actually, about 4 months ago, our U.S. government, NASA, it's the Chandra X-ray Observatory Satellite, Chandra, spelled C-H-A-N-D-R-A, X-ray Observatory Satellite, did actually cite Planet X. And the disinformation that they put out, they did actually report that they saw this huge comet, but they were not able to identify it. That's the falsehood right there. But the fact that they did notice a huge comet, I guess it was impossible to cover it up. So they actually made this report, but the report was somewhere buried somewhere in the news. Marshall Masters, a former science editor for CNN, Cable News Network, has done a lot of research on Planet X, and he has mentioned that he had reported that someone had put on the Internet actual footage, film footage or photographs of Planet X that was taken by the South Pole Telescope. This is a secret telescope. It's not been revealed to the public. They spent millions of dollars to construct this South Pole Telescope in 2007. And in January of 2008, there was someone who was probably either a friend or acquaintance or one of the astronomers themselves at the South Pole Observatory who put this visual information, this photographic evidence of Planet X on the YouTube. Okay, within one day, this photographic evidence of Planet X taken from the South Pole Telescope was taken down.
Well, there's a series of events that are going to lead up to the pole shift, and by that time, everybody's going to be concerned. And NASA knew about this over 50 years ago, and even before. At some point, the government became cognizant of the fact that a planet comes back into our solar system every 3,657 years, and when it does, it usually causes pole shifts. They were told this was going to be one of the worst ever, if not the worst ever. Not a collision, but it's just going to kick the Earth over, and the core is going to separate from the crust. The sun is going to stop rising and setting in the sky. A couple of days will go by, and then the crust will reattach itself to the core, and we will have a new geography. There's a lot of evidence that things are not the way they should be. And people, you know, officially, well-known astronomers, government-supported astronomical observatories, they can't speak about it, and they're not going to speak about it. And if you try and get them to, they're going to pretend there's nothing to it.
We've got more and more evidence that we have the approaching dwarf star that's coming into our inner solar system, and it's approaching from a very high angle to the ecliptic or the solar plane of all the rotation of the planets around the sun. And that means it won't be visible except in the southern hemisphere until it's in a relatively close proximity, but it's having gravitational effects now that are triggering off very deep earthquakes that we call mantle quakes that are 300 to 400 miles deep. They're well below the crust of the Earth. And there's evidence that there's changes in the seafloor. So the seafloor has risen off of Australia by as much as 13 feet per day, according to their sonoboids.
And maybe they're hoping against hope that it never happens. So, you know, let's not panic, everybody.
Well, look, I would be of that same notion, trying to figure out how to make stores of provisions for those who do actually survive what is coming, if anybody does, and, you know, try to reinvent society out of that, because with key industry and knowledge and stuff underground or even in orbit. I don't know where they put it for safety, but to try to be able to rebuild after it happens with as many survivors as we can.
If you knew, Stan, if you were part of a global power structure and you knew an asteroid was headed toward the planet, you even knew where it would hit and when, and you even have computer models on projected deaths and, you know, calamity, would you tell the planet as a whole, hey, folks, you know, half of Europe is going to be knocked out, or North America is going to be knocked out, and it's going to affect the whole planet. We're going to be in a cloud of darkness for 22 years. Or would you just start collecting people slowly, quietly, you know, pinpointing certain people, moving them into underground shelters, getting them ready and prepared when this thing happens?
It's a hard decision, and we're talking about people who have been elected or have taken a position of leadership over nations. If you look at it as a global situation, like you're saying, if I knew on a global basis it was going to happen, my objective would be to try to save the human race or a portion of it and the knowledge and not let it go quietly into the night. So that means, yes, I would probably keep it secret, simply because we need to have orders to even save the ones that we're going to save.
Right. have that, unfortunately, collected few picked out, ready to start a new civilization.
Well, that plus, I would think that probably there would be, pockets of survivors everywhere that we could gather together, the chance and circumstance of preserved through the disaster. We can gather them together after the fact and, broaden the gene pool, I guess. We have NASA looking for Planet X or some big heavy thing coming in. Hey, NASA's looking at it. Wow. Well, I wonder if we're going to get hit by an asteroid. Well, that's another little crisis curve.
We know the governments are seeing it, but the question is for us, what are they seeing? Most likely, this is a large object with a group of satellites, a mini constellation, but it could be a comet. It could perturb the sun electrically. When this flyby happens, this is going to be a slow motion train wreck for a long time. You're going to run out of those supplies, and it's going to be catch as catch can, and you're going to have to work together with other people to build survival communities.
The Earth is not going to be destroyed, and the human race is not going to come to an end. But it is going to be a difficult period of time when it begins, and let me tell you, it has already begun. The reaction from the sun is a clear response to the presence of this other body. Now, this other body has already been photographed by telescopes in southern Chile and in New Zealand. So it's close enough now that optical telescopes have pictures of it. And they're studying it carefully, try to determine, what is it they call it, celestial mechanics of how everything moves. Well, if our remote viewers are correct, it's going to be a difficult passing, because we and it are going to be on the same side of the sun at the same time, and that means all hell's going to break loose.
Because obviously something momentous is about to happen. Most people kind of feel in their guts that the globalist fact that they're not protecting the grid, that the Congress puts through a bill to protect the grid from a coronal mass ejection, which every regular, even regular scientists are saying, and yet the Senate blocks it, stops it. Something terrible is coming, and they can almost feel it. That's why the economy is having these shutters. We see the housing sales dropping. Something is going to happen between now and next summer that's going to change the whole psychology of the planet. And they're talking about, quote, first contact as well with, quote, ET, which we know are the fallen ones. People need to get prepared for the fact that we're going to be on a level that's going to transcend normal, what I call, day-to-day reality, whereby next summer, according to some of the scientists that I've have been in contact with, they'll start seeing an object in the southern hemisphere that doesn't belong there. And once people start to get the word out, they're not going to be able to keep the lid on this. Yeah, you'll be able to get some binoculars in your backyard or a decent backyard telescope. And you'll be able to see it. You won't need an infrared telescope or an X-ray telescope or a South Pole telescope that's been watching it for years. You'll be able to see it with a good backyard telescope or high-powered binoculars.
But there's more than one object.
Yes.
So what will be seen as naked eye visible next summer, all the talking heads will come out and say, oh, yes, there it is, but see, it is not on a collision course with Earth. And they will be right. But that is
sure.
Not the object of concern.
That'll be the spin right there.
Even little space rocks that can zing into Earth with little or no notice, sometimes packing the explosive power equal to several Hiroshima atomic bombs.
10 meters, 30 feet, could destroy a small city. Let's say 40 meters could destroy something like Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, how many of them are out there? That's not very big.
No, and this is where we get into this thing. There are millions and millions of them, and the great difficulty is you can't see them. You know, they're so small compared to other astronomical objects. You just can't find them.
That the whole global warming deception, man-made global warming, is a cover story to distract us, I guess, from the real, even uglier truth, and that is, yes, the ocean levels are going to rise when Planet X approaches, the tenth planet. That's going to cause some sort of a geomagnetic reversal that will unleash this huge body of water near the equator, essentially.
In the early 1980s, and I've known about this for a little while, the Washington Post reported on this, but you found a lot of our reports, in addition to the Washington Post report and a few others, about this potential 10th planet or some sort of mystery object?
December 81, Astronomy Magazine launched a article called Search for the Tenth Planet.
Even though there could be some chaos because they would make this announcement, I think that they could not keep it from us. Some dedicated scientists would leak it. Jason Rand's theory, of course, is that the brown dwarf is not inhabited, but that it will affect this planet in unspeakable planetary change ways. And I remember a long time ago, there was an article in a paper when they were just talking about extra planets in the solar system, and they talked about this 10th planet out there. And I think they're going to find more, as a matter of fact. I think the mistake a lot of those folks made, as I said a long time ago, was pinpointing specific dates. They didn't occur. It was supposed to happen around 2003. Remember? May of 2003, it did not occur. But I think if they had left it open, more general, more people would have believed in this. How would they explain, though, the uncontrollable natural disasters that could occur when this happens? I mean, they'd have to say something. People would say, this is just too weird. This weather, it's not supposed to happen this way.
That will flood miles inland in the continental United States, Canada, possibly elsewhere around the world. We're talking a flood of biblical proportions. Government agencies are aware of this. They've shared this with certain personnel. The U.S. Navy has apparently shared this with their service people. And there are apparently safe havens. The U.S. Government has been very busy constructing huge underground bases, if you will, in order to preserve government operations to some degree.
A company with a doomsday plan is promising a nuke-proof bunker under the Mojave Desert with an atrium, gym, and jail. Robert Vecino, who runs the Del Mar-based company called the Vivos, has collected deposits on half of the 132 spaces planned in the 13,000-square-foot bunker in Barstow, California. The facility is among several popping up across the country, as fears of doomsday have been fueled recently by strong earthquakes. Robert is now head of the Vivos Project, a network of 20 nuclear blast-proof underground shelters for the survival of 4,000 people for up to 1 year. The shelters are each 20,000 square feet in size with several floor levels buried about 40 feet underground.
I guess my personal biggest concern is anarchy. And the reason for that is too many variables can trigger social anarchy, such as an EMP blast, such as a global economic meltdown, that anarchy will be devastating to as much as 90% of the population. So in that regard, what Vivos becomes is a modern-day fort, or fortress citadel, if you will, where our members will go and have a safe haven and be totally protected underground. They can live there for a year and outlive the massive kill-off that I guess you would expect on the surface with anarchy.
How did you pick the locations, Robert?
We did an evaluation of what the criteria should be, and the first criteria is to be within 150 miles of each metro area that we serve. So we're convenient to get to, but not so close that we're underneath a ground zero target. Additionally, we want to be in high altitudes from 3,000 to 6,000 feet. We want a sloped terrain so that in the case of a mega tsunami, the water will drain off, and we won't find ourselves coming out later underneath a new ocean. These are all very confidential sites. But should they be compromised by the local neighbors or for whatever reason, there are extensive security measures. I like to say you might get to the gate, but you'll never get over the fence, and you'll definitely not get to the blast-proof doors. We have a number of security measures within and outside of the facility, including remote-controlled sensors and remote-controlled devices, which I really can't get into. But the minute that facility is locked down, you will never get to the door. And there are just some secrets that I can't get into. We also have a security department and a jail. So if anybody is a threat to anybody else in the facility, they will go to the detention area, and they will stay there until they've calmed down and they can be put back into society. We determined with our experts that 99% of all catastrophes would be resolved within 1 year. The facilities are radiation proof. They're also biological, chemical proof, extensive filtration systems. They can be submerged for up to 500 hours under 500 feet of water. You know, they're really absolute impenetrable fortresses. You know, this is a life or death situation. At that point, nobody's going to... We want every means of defense. And you can bet that any member that has any kind of munitions will be bringing them along with them.
If people knew you had this available and they, you know, didn't buy in, they'll probably do whatever they can to get in, wouldn't they?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. We have an insecurity measures that they're not going to get beyond the fence, the outer perimeter. But once we lock down, should they get over the fence, they won't get down the 40-foot shaft into the facility.
If someone leaked where they were and something happened, you can't just lock the door. You're going to have to get even tougher, aren't you? It's sad.
Yeah, it's going to become a life-and-death situation. But as I said, we have the measures to eliminate it, and hopefully without harming people. Some of the measures are very passive, but they're impenetrable. You know, you're going to have to use your imagination. I really can't get into the detail.
If you are under attack, physical attack, by groups, could you fight your way?
The facility will defend itself, yes.
It will.
Yeah, I mean, we can push people back about a half a mile in every direction. Like I said, unless you're an army and you've got special equipment, you're not going to penetrate this facility.
Well, you know, one of the things that a lot of people have factored a lot of this into is do they know something about a comet, asteroid, massive body that's going to be swinging by close? And there's certainly a lot of talk about Planet X for a while there, and then it kind of faded out because, you know, people make predictions and things like that. The point here is that these things have been patterns of events throughout human history. Then it would seem that just like Halley's Comet comes by every 75 years, that if there is a Planet X or Wormwood, that it would be coming by on a regular basis and great floods throughout history, which are mentioned in every creation story of every single community of indigenous people, folks who have never read the Bible. So obviously there is some memory of this. Our government or governments friendly to the United States control access to every observatory substantial in size and power enough to be able to see these things that might be coming from a distance, indicating, of course, the clampdown on panic. What much sense does it make in the event of massive global flooding to build an underground?
The thing is that you have to understand is when this magnetic field of Planet X interacts with the core of the Earth, what you get is heating from below. The key to global warming is heating of the air from CO2. Well, that's a lie. That's the cover-up. And I believe that Al Gore volunteered to be part of the cover-up for the elite to postpone everybody finding out about this. The reason why is that the glaciers are melting from below and the ocean bottoms are warming up because the core is warming up. And look at Mother Shipton. 500 years ago, this woman writes prophecies called Mother Shipton's Prophecies. And you can look them up and read them. And she clearly foresaw Planet X. I mean, and she had no connection to Edgar Cayce talking about full shift or Velikovsky's analysis of the fact that the Earth must have been a much larger planet in a different orbit and then got hit by something in the Pacific and got moved.
I got to thinking, after hearing on the John Moore show about the various alphabet soup agency relocations out to higher ground in the central United States, that eventually NASA would also consider it, and many NASA facilities are along the Gulf Coast, including the Kennedy Space Center. Back in February of 2010, I personally stumbled upon a press release by NASA, and it was only three paragraphs long. And this $74 million NASA contract was awarded to an outside subsidiary of Prudential back in August of 2007, which entails relocation services for employees of NASA, and this contract would expire in 2 to 5 years after that date.
This is now a historic storm. This is the lowest pressure of a low pressure, a non-tropical storm or hurricane in U.S. history. 28.2 inches of mercury. That is low. And this was, as I mentioned, a low pressure record for the state as well. Earlier yesterday, it was just for the state of Wisconsin. Now it's for the entire U.S., but it was recorded at 28.38 inches of mercury. And that's similar to a Category 2 hurricane. It was recorded at Superior at 11:35 yesterday morning, and Minnesota also recorded a new record yesterday afternoon, International Falls, at 28.3 inches of mercury. But now, as I mentioned, it's a record for the entire country.
I talk about how at some point, violent, bizarre weather will become a weekly, if not a daily, occurrence all over the planet. And that, in fact, is what we're seeing. Violent, dangerous, really bizarre weather all over the planet is becoming the norm. The traditional meteorology, they don't have a clue. They really don't. Things are happening that, according to traditional meteorology, can't happen. Hurricanes over dry land. We had a hurricane here in my backyard May 8, 2009. And according to traditional meteorology, that couldn't have happened. You can't have hurricanes over dry land. My friend Ann Morrison, she was at CERT training in St. Louis County just 6 or 7 weeks after Hurricane Katrina. They had a young NOAA scientist there giving this lecture. Young man, young enough to be her son, to be my son, a young scientist in his early to mid-30s. And during a break in the hallway, the young scientist made the following statement. Just wait until people start seeing these hurricanes forming over land. When my friend Ann tried to ask a follow-up question, the young scientist instantly knew that his career, his paycheck, his pension was on the line, and he clammed up and would not respond to her question, a follow-up question about his statement regarding hurricanes over dry land, which, of course, we're starting to see. In my DVD, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You, my editor located the radar image of the hurricane that was over Oklahoma, a hurricane over Oklahoma. This can't happen, ladies and gentlemen, but it is happening.
A Category 5 hurricane has a threshold of 156 miles per hour. So once we get to 156, then we've got a Category 5. This storm has 180 mile an hour wind. 180 miles an hour has 180 mile an hour wind. 180 miles an hour. Gusting over 200 miles an hour. Stronger than Katrina at its strongest. It's now moving west-northwest at 13 or southwest at 13 miles an hour. There's China. There's Taiwan. Here are the Philippines. That's the northernmost island. That's Luzon. Our maximum wave heights here approaching 40 feet. This is coming from the Naval Research Center. That is about as impressive and scary a satellite image of a hurricane you are ever going to see. I mean, unbelievably symmetrical storm, huge central dense overcast. That's the business end of the hurricane right there. And then you see that incredibly well-formed eye. This is an unbelievably strong storm. So this thing is probably going to be devastating for some parts of Luzon there in the Philippines.
The Denver airport. So I found something near baggage in our, actually the check-in point where you go through security. And it's an emblem, and it basically says the New World Airport Commission. Well, I've Googled this, and I've talked to people, and no one can tell me what it is. But this is a public-funded marble statue or whatever you want to call it, the New World Airport Commission, whatever the heck that is. But it doesn't sound like something local. It sounds like it might be connected to something that could be coming. Because I saw enough there. And just being in DIA itself is just a bizarre experience. You drive up from a distance, it looks like tunnels. I saw massive construction going on my return trip to DIA to come home, and it's absolutely amazing.
There are entire cutting-edge, really science fiction-like factories underground in some of these facilities. They're vast industrial production facilities that can essentially manufacture virtually anything from scratch. Say they needed to make a microwave oven. Everything exists underground in these facilities, and there are multiple such facilities in the United States alone, deeply buried. They're large and extremely high-tech. They would actually make the glass, or they could make the glass if they needed for the little pane in the front of the microwave. They have foundries down there where they could make the metal and roll out the aluminum. They could make the electronic and electrical components from scratch. They have all of the tools and machinery for that. If they needed to make an automobile, they could create an automobile from scratch, making the tires and everything, and so forth. This is virtually like something out of a science fiction movie, and yet there are multiple such facilities.
Worried about Earth-threatening asteroids? Well, one of NASA's newest space telescopes has spotted 25,000 never-before-seen asteroids in just 6 months. 95 of those are considered near Earth, but the language of astronomy, that means within 30 million miles. Called WISE for the Wild Field Infrared Survey Explorer, the telescope completes its very first full scan of the sky on Saturday and then begins another round of imaging.
A Minotaur 4 rocket carrying a space surveillance satellite was successfully launched Saturday evening from the Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. Payload is a space-based space surveillance satellite, an SBSS. The SBSS will be used to track space debris from its 392-mile-high polar orbit. Space debris, folks? Come on. If they're really looking for space debris, they could have launched this years ago. I think you and I can now surmise what kind of space junk they're going up to look for.
Hey folks, so that concludes the 47-track MP3 soundbite playlist that I've created. I spent most of the day at that, so I hope you folks enjoyed that. Well, there sure is a lot going on. I hope you folks enjoyed the soundbites I played there. Sure is a lot to learn. Sure is a lot going on right now. We're going to get into Earth Changes Report. We don't have any breaks until the top of the hour due to the East Coast switching their clocks tonight. For some reason, there's no breaks, just the top and the bottom of the hour breaks. Well, we have the ongoing eruptions going on at the Merapi volcano in Indonesia. This is off volcanolive.com. This is dated today. Well, it actually is dated tomorrow, but that's because they're in a different time zone than us. Several airlines have temporarily suspended flights between Singapore and Jakarta because of volcanic ash from the Merapi volcano. Among those affected were Singapore Airlines, Japan Airlines, Malaysia Airlines, Lufthansa, and Cathay Pacific. Domestic flights have been unaffected. The eruption, tell me about a volcano that was erupting on the southern tip of South America, I believe he told me. It's called the Reunion. Something like that. I can't pronounce it the way John can, but that's the way you would spell it, like a family reunion. But he says that the last time that thing erupted was about 3,600 years ago when Planet X made its last passage. So we're seeing all these volcanic eruptions, all these big earthquakes in the southern latitudes, and most of us Planet X researchers know that X is coming up from the south. But as it arcs over on its inbound perihelion maneuver, it's going to go over the northern latitudes, so things could eventually start becoming more severe in the northern latitudes. We got a sunspot 1112 in the sun rotating back into the Earth-facing side of the sun. They've actually renumbered it. They're now calling it sunspot region 1121. But we really want to keep a close eye on this sunspot region, because it leashed out a M5 class solar flare this morning. The eruption was at 15:38 universal time today. It was actually an M5.4 class. Now keep in mind that this sunspot region had a magnetic filament on it the middle of last month. This magnetic filament is about 248,000 miles long. That would be greater than the distance from the Earth to the Moon. So this is a humongous magnetic filament that we need to watch. I've been watching the solar wind speed. That's sort of been slow. It's been hovering around 300 kilometers a second. So the solar wind speed is sort of slow. There is also a solar wind stream flowing from a coronal hole in the sun that could brush past the Earth's magnetic field around the 9th of November. That the 9th could actually end up becoming the day of the false flag terror event that people are talking about. It's scattered all over the internet right now. Because I was talking to Lucas on the phone yesterday, and he said, you know, because of that Simpsons cartoon where it shows November 6th, well, if you put the 6th upside down, that could mean November 9th, and if you do that backwards, that would be 9/11. They tend to carry out events on Tuesdays, so we really need to look out for what might happen on Tuesday. The activity is starting to increase again. There's been so many alerts and warnings and that about solar storms. I know, if you folks recall, there was a FEMA tabletop exercise in Boulder, Colorado earlier this year to deal with impending solar storms. That's something a lot of people probably forgot about already. Oh, here's another one. There was an entire harbor that collapsed into the sea down in Brazil. I think this happened back on Wednesday. You folks may want to watch that on YouTube. But it's just, it's intense watching this harbor just go into the sea. 53-foot long trailers and, those long rectangular carriers, what are those called? Yeah, the container ships just going off into the sea. Talking to my friend there in the background. I got a visitor here tonight in the Light of Day studios. So you folks might want to check that out. Earth changes are definitely going through the roof, so to speak, right now. There was a nuclear drill that was held in Florida today. I got that from John DiNardo. Some of you folks might not be aware of that. I haven't even clicked on the link myself here, but I'm going to see what it says. There's a lot of talk right now about some nuclear event that the powers to be might pull off, but I got to thinking maybe that's actually in actuality a cover story for some event that's going to happen off the sun, because the sun could create an electromagnetic pulse effect very similar to a nuclear explosion here on Earth that would also put out an EMP, so they might be trying to confuse us. This is dated today. Nuclear drill puts national focus on Kings Bay, Florida. As many as 1,800 military and civilian personnel from across the nation will participate in a simulated nuclear weapon incident at Kings Bay Naval Submarine Base beginning today. While the majority of activity will be on base, residents living near Kings Bay will be affected by the drill. They can expect to see emergency vehicles, especially today, driving to a local hospital. Residents may also see smoke and hear loud noises coming from the base. Captain John O'Neill, commanding officer at Kings Bay, described the drill as a national-level exercise involving all branches of the military, the FBI, local public safety officials, and medical personnel. He's quoted as saying, we'll look at the initial response and coordination of all the agencies. The Defense Threat Reduction Agency is sponsoring the multi-agency response exercise, Navy officials said. So that goes on and on. But keep in mind, we also have a bomb out of the country. He's got rumored to be 3,000 close friends with him. There's a number of aircraft carriers and warships accompanying him over on his trip to India. We got Hillary Clinton down in Christchurch, New Zealand. She got off a plane down there yesterday, and for some reason she attended some get-together that had to do with something going on in the Antarctic Research Station, and I got to telling John DiNardo about that, and some of you folks may know the South Pole Telescope is in the Antarctica, so was Hillary maybe being briefed behind closed doors on what maybe they're seeing at the South Pole Telescope? Oh, yeah, there was a small aftershock from a earthquake that also occurred as soon as Hillary got off that plane down there yesterday. You know, if the elites are really pulling off all these earthquakes, well, why would they do it when Hillary's getting off an airplane? Maybe it's because God is really sending Planet X our way, and maybe that's sort of like a little warning to Hillary that God's going to bound and determined to get these elites that are going underground. Who knows? I mean, you could sit here and speculate about this stuff all day long. I don't really have any material prepared here. I'm just going through emails and figure out what I should talk about. Let's see, Comet Hartley, that was quite an event. NASA put out, I guess they were going to capture like something like 62 or 64,000 images of the passage of Comet Hartley. Well, NASA showed us the pictures of the comet, and sure enough, folks, it doesn't look like a dirty little snowball comet like they've been trying to brainwash us for all these years. It actually looks like an asteroid to me. And one day John Moore was telling me on the phone, he had asked some professional in the astronomical community, what's the difference between comets, meteors, and asteroids? And he says, and he told John Moore, there really is no difference. They're all rocks. Oh, let's see. Fireballs over Canada. I got that from, Eric on my email list. I'm going to pull that up. And while I'm pulling that up, I did want to mention they did scrubbed the launch of the space shuttle Discovery yesterday morning because they're alleging because of a gaseous hydrogen leak at the 17-inch ground umbilical carrier plate disconnect that's on the side of the external tank. It's actually an umbilical that extends off the fixed service structure. I got to wondering, is that just a cover story because of these fireballs that were being seen over Canada? You know, maybe they don't want to put the shuttle up in orbit because of rocks coming in from Planet X's debris field. Who really knows? But here's the article. This is off of disclose.tv. Great balls of fire over Canada. NASA investigates. Yeah, right. Like NASA really doesn't know what's going on. How dumb do they think we are? Well, my friend was just telling me here in the background about something about a record-setting aurora borealis in northern Europe, but I didn't come across that. I know on spaceweather.com they've been showing a lot of the northern lights over the Norway area. Well, back to the fireballs over Canada. This is dated Thursday. Montreal, great balls of fire have been reported swooping over eastern Canada and several U.S. states. Even NASA's on the case. Like I said, yeah, how dumb does NASA think some of us really are that they're investigating this like they don't know? There are different theories about what was behind the sighting of those fireballs. A NASA spacecraft got a closer look at one of the possible sources today. The spacecraft flew past Hartley 2, taking close-up pictures after the comet made one of its closest passes by Earth this week. But one expert is skeptical of reports that any fireballs came from Hartley, which is roughly 1.2 kilometers wide and spews deadly cyanide gas. Scientist Peter Brown says his meteor group at the University of Western Ontario tracked one of the two fireballs, while the other was tracked by NASA's Meteorite Environment Office. So who knows what's really up with that? I thought I'd just throw that in for what it's worth. We'll be coming into the top of the hour break here in about 2 or 3 minutes. There's other things going on. Obama signed an executive order out of the White House here on, I believe it was Thursday. I'm going to try to hunt that down. But, you know, here we have Obama out of the country with rumored to be 3,000 friends, and I come across this executive order. I'm going to try to pull it up while I speak here. You're listening to Light of Day live Saturday night, November 6, 2010. There was an executive order signed to Obama, and I need to find out the exact number so you folks just think I'm not making this up because this is something that was really issued out of the White House. Here it is, November 4th executive order, thanks to Kimberly on my email list. I really appreciate that, Kimberly. Executive order of succession within the Department of Justice. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but he essentially outlines three states that could succeed the current attorney general should anything happen to the one in charge in Washington, D.C. The states that would show as a potential successor would be Virginia, Minnesota, and Arizona. This was issued by the White House on November 4th. That would have been 2 days ago. So we got to wonder what's up with that. Fireballs over Canada. Let's see. Executive order, Hillary in New Zealand. We got the Simpsons episode. I don't know if any of you folks got to check that out. You could put that into a search engine on YouTube. But we'll be back. You're listening to Live Dan Orion. Stay tuned.
Orion Talk Radio Network is here.